Welcome to this edition of Sport Flight, FYI, the BKS of sports talk. Another busy week, Sean, in the world of sports. And as each and every week, we have Sean Bush from Stats, Inc., who discusses, reviews, and previews the sports world, the good, the bad, and even the ugly world of sports. This week, we talk about Sport Flight's bronze pioneer, who is the noted singer, actor, and athlete, Paul Robeson. All right, our feature topic for today will be the black quarterbacks make significant gains in the NCAA. Also, the HBCU scores, football classic information, and as always, we discuss the playoffs and their implications as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. In the American League, as most people are aware, the American League Central is still up for grabs. The American League East is still up for grabs. I believe the American League West is pretty much put away by California. I don't see Oakland coming back for that. And we will review and preview the NFL. We will review Week 3 and preview Week 4. But before we do anything, we will once again talk about the black quarterback. Sean, you and I had a discussion on this week, and stating that, 34, I believe it's something in the neighborhood of 34 of the 119 Division A programs now have starting black quarterbacks, and that's pretty significant, especially in light of the fact that the big top-tier conferences, such as the ACC, the Big East, the Big Ten, the Big 12, SEC, they all have these starting quarterbacks, such as Vince, the quarterback with Texas.
Yes.
When they beat, and Texas continues to be number two, when they beat Ohio State in week two of the season. And then you're talking about Marcus Vick.
Mike Vick's younger brother, who finally decided to stay out of trouble.
Chris Leak in Florida. This is just to name a few. However, there is some information as well indicating that some teams, especially out in the West, don't utilize black quarterbacks for whatever reason. And you gave me your reasoning behind this.
Well, the biggest reason why you don't see no quarterbacks in the West Coast is a lot of West Coast teams play a multiple wide receiver West Coast offense style or a run and gun style offense. And for those type of offenses, you need a quote-unquote standard pocket passer. And when you look at most of these quarterbacks, they're not pocket passers. They're more scramblers. They'll go and look for receivers, but they won't look as long. They won't stay in the pocket as long because they can go ahead and break out and go ahead and run up the field vertically. You can see that in the pros. You look at, as far as pocket passers right now, you look at them in college, really the one that comes to mind is Chris Leak because of the style of offense that they play. Style offense really does fit him as a pocket passer. But you look at Marcus Vick. Marcus Vick is just like his older brother, Michael, in the NFL. He's going to go ahead and give you a 3, maybe a 5-step drop. But he's only checking down maybe 1 or 2 receivers, and then he's getting up and going. He's getting up and running. And they make plays. They make running plays designed for quarterbacks like that, a quarterback draw. There's not too many quarterback draws off of a shotgun. You bring that down as far as the college and even high school level, you see black quarterbacks more as athletes who can go ahead and do different things for you and offset of a pocket passer. I do remember a couple of years ago there was a kid in high school, and I do not remember his name, but it stood out. He was in California in high school. They will go 5 wide.
5 wide. So that meant it was an empty backfield.
It was an empty backfield. All the running plays he did, it was all quarterback draws. So he'll be in the shotgun or he'll be under center, any type of running play, it was because of him. So, and if you look at the situation, if a person, as far as criticism, is a perfect example is Vic. Vic is only thrown, he averages around about 150, 160 yards passing. But he also runs for anywhere between 80 to 100 yards in a game. Well, you go ahead and combine those total yards. Those total yards are equal to and equivalent to a pocket passer who doesn't have the legs, say like a Peyton Manning, Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady. So, to me, I think they equal, but they just do it in a different way. A couple of weeks ago, what did we see? We saw Michael Vick go in motion as a wide receiver on a play. You're not going to do that with Peyton Manning. You're not going to do that going back to the college level. You're not going to do that with Matt Leiner. You're just not. But you can do that with a Chris Leak. You can do that with a Vincent. You can do that with a Vic. So it's just a dynamic, and people are still so gung-ho about a quarterback and what a quarterback is supposed to do. Quarterback is supposed to is able to change the game, you see. And it's just not necessarily, they don't need to be throwing the ball 60 and 70 yards. They don't need to be, as far as a pass, they don't need to be going for 300, 350 yards a game. They can go for 175, 180, rush for 90, score four touchdowns, and still come out with a victory.
Well, those type quarterbacks and those type players, I think, to use John Thomas's terms, are show ponies. They just show up with the stats only because, as you are well aware, especially in the NFL, running game and defense is pretty much what wins games for you. How many years has it been now? Peyton Manning has put up phenomenal passing numbers, which, by the way, we're going to talk about Indianapolis and what is going on in Indianapolis this week. We're going to kind of flip that, so to speak. As most people are talking about how great their defense is, we're going to ask the question, what's wrong with their offense? But, John Thompson would say that those are just show ponies.
As far as the athletic quarterback?
Just putting up stats. I'd rather have a winner than someone who just puts up stats. Now, that's not to say I wouldn't take Peyton Manning on my team. I think should Peyton Manning get back to what he was doing the past seven seasons, then Indianapolis definitely has to be considered the number one viable candidate coming out of the AFC for the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, absolutely. I do believe that. But I think one of the things that harms him is he is glued in that backfield, which is susceptible for him getting crushed. And his inability to run hurts Indianapolis, I do feel. Now, they got great athletes as wide receivers and running backs, and that's fine. But I do believe that extra element, see, they don't have to worry about that extra element with Peyton. They can go ahead and just rush the quarterback, and he's going to still be there. He's not going to run. If he gets 100
yards.
Well, the only
thing they have to consider is a draw or something with Edgerrin James. But getting back to the college quarterback, do you foresee that changing on the West Coast, so to speak, with regards to the quarterbacks, or is that simply going to be only if they change their system out there?
It's just a mindset. Remember, long period of time, black quarterbacks, period, wasn't acceptable. Somebody said, gave a black quarterback a chance, saw that it worked, then others gave them a chance as well. As soon as people change their mindset of what a quarterback can do and what is expected of a quarterback, this won't be an issue. It's just that simple. It won't be an issue until mindsets are changed. Everybody still have mindsets as far as quarterbacks and what quarterbacks should and should not be doing.
But when will the mindset change regarding the black head coaches? You have but three currently in Division 1A, and that's Dorrell out at the UCLA, Sylvester Crooms in Mississippi, and Tyron Willingham at Washington.
Well, unfortunately, we've been asking those questions for a very long time, and we're going to still be asking those questions for a very long time. And when you look at them, it's unfortunately still the old boys network. These colleges have mindsets. They're going to go ahead and hire who they feel comfortable with. And right now...
Now, is that more an instance of the colleges doing that or the alumni or the backers from the various colleges?
Both. Depending on who has the most power of in a specific school. It could be more of a alumni type deal, and where the president or the athletic director doesn't have that much power, and his influence doesn't go as far further in one instance, and vice versa on the other. So I think it's a combination of both, because we look at the Notre Dame situation. They was very happy this first year, but they were suspecting after that first year, well, we can go ahead and go, you can get us to the championship, and if you don't, you're gone. And when that happened, look what happened. Then they decided to go ahead and get somebody like
Tyrone Willingham.
Then they decided to go ahead and get Charlie Weiss, who's is.
But remember, Charlie Weiss wasn't their first choice. Their first choice was Urban Meyer, coming out of Utah.
Well, absolutely.
Urban Meyer turned them down to accept the position in Florida.
He turned down his dream job to go to Florida. Well, absolutely. But still, they went ahead and still got a person that they felt more comfortable with. And if you look at it, I think on their short list...
Why hire Tyrone Willingham in the first place?
Well, Tyrone Willingham was
that's
the hot...
like taking one step forward and taking two steps back.
Tyrone Willingham was a hot commodity when he was hired. But remember, Tyrone Willingham wasn't their first choice either.
Well, Tyrone Willingham, well, yeah, O'Leary.
O'Leary, until they found out he lied.
Which O'Leary had perhaps the biggest upset of the weekend, beating Louisville.
That wasn't even a beat. That wasn't even a woodshed. That was just straight getting punked. And that was a lot of people's national champion. That was a lot of people saying it was going undefeated. And the things that South Florida did to Louisville, you could swear that was their first spring practice that they was playing. They was running them all over the field.
Well, maybe that goes back to... It was a couple of weeks ago you said that someone was going to be pimp slapped.
Yeah, it wasn't Notre Dame. It was Louisville a couple of weeks later, obviously.
Right, exactly.
Because that was pimp slapped.
Yes, and that's what happened exactly in that particular instance. But with the emergence of the black quarterbacks in college at the Division I-A level, some people should also realize that one of the things that our show does is we talk about the HBCU, the historically black college universities.
Yes.
And on those colleges, you would automatically think that the entire team, including the quarterbacks, are black. That's not always the case. There are some HBCU teams with white quarterbacks.
Yes. And, you know, my thing is, that's not a bad thing.
No, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm just stating the assumption of most people.
Yeah, a lot of people, there is assumptions. I'm not even going to lie to you. The first time I saw a black HBCU game, I was stunned that the kicker was white. I was stunned they had a kicker. Because if you look at the scores, no offense, they're not normal football scores. You see 18-12. You see 23-8. So to see a kicker go ahead and go for an extra point, and it went in, and he's not black, you know, that did shock me. But that doesn't mean we cannot have, you know, black kickers or black punters. No, you can't say that at all. Sports is sports. When you get athletes to come play in your university, if they play the job well, they do the job well, they should earn the time. And if a white player goes and tries out to be a quarterback at a historical black college and gets it, you know, we should not be shocked by that, and we shouldn't be angered by that either. We should. But what you need is, as far as a more grassroots effort, as far as developing players, just like in any other sport. We have no problem developing athletes to play basketball. We don't have no problem as far as, you know, getting them baseball. We can do the same thing for football. It starts at the grassroots. It starts at Pop Warner in Chicago. I don't know many Pop Warner city teams. Well, if we had a lot more Pop Warner.
Warner, do you also have in Chicago PAL, Police Athletic League?
No.
You do not have that?
No, we don't. If we do, I haven't heard about it. I'm stunned to see.
Well, maybe that's because the police in Chicago are too busy, you know, with all the crime. And
well, we're not even going to discuss that. I do not want no emails. I'm on direct email straight to James@urbansports.com.
I'm just speculating.
Yeah, that's good speculation, but I'm not going to talk about it.
Which is part of our job. We speculate.
We speculate. We do that. But I think we need more grassroots efforts and to continue to have kids involved, not just getting them started in high school. If you get them started in grammar school, I think that will only help the talent pool down the road. And if you can do that, I think that will be great.
Well, some people say that is what has happened to boxing, because the athletes that once went into boxing are now playing basketball or playing football, and that's why there's a problem, especially at the heavyweight level, with having a boxer who has charisma, a boxer who has excellent technique, and one that could wear the belt and have most people behind them.
Let's be honest. You got to be half crazy anyway to go up to be boxing anyway, because you're going to get hit in the head a little bit too much. You have to be a little bit you have to be a little bit crazy to go into boxing and use that as a professional sport. And then look at all the look at all the boxers, the ones who got out too late or never got out, a.k.a. Evander Holyfield. The medical issues, Muhammad Ali.
But staying in that area on boxing, last week Sportflight reported that veteran IBF lightweight Levander Johnson underwent brain surgery after losing to, I believe it was, Jesus Chavez in a Las Vegas fight the week before. And we are sorry to report that Levander Johnson did die from his injuries sustained in that bout. And Johnson becomes this year the second boxer to die as a result of ring injuries. So as we mentioned last week also, the most violent sport out there is not football, but it is boxing. Well, some people have questioned why the referee didn't stop it earlier.
Well, yeah, and that's always a major concern because, you know, it's once again, you can't win either way. People get upset if he jumps in, if the ref jumps in too soon and waves him and it calls off the fight.
Yeah, but I'm a proponent of better safe than sorry.
Yeah, I do believe that as well. Because you're talking about a man's life. Now, you look at the facts of it is, he got his biggest payday, Johnson did, and that was only $150,000.
And unfortunately, it was his last payday.
And that was unfortunately his last payday, because they said Chavez was just beating on him. They said Chavez connected on Johnson more than 400 shots, and it was like many of them were clean headshots. And for them to stop it 38 seconds into the 11th round, people was wondering, why did they not stop that sooner?
Yeah, why didn't they do it sooner? But unfortunately, that's not a new story in the world of boxing. Also, last week we mentioned that there was going to be a heavyweight bout, and it did occur this past week in Atlantic City between Samuel Peter and former heavyweight champion Vladimir Klitschko.
Yes.
And at that time, last week, we were stating and wondering if Samuel Peter would turn out to be a wannabe, because he felt that the title should be his. He had the charisma, he had the technique, and the talent. Well, he lost a unanimous decision to Vladimir. And so, even though he did knock him down three times,
mm-hmm.
he did knock Klitschko down three times.
Right.
He lost in a unanimous decision Saturday night.
This does, this bout does is, it sets up Klitschko-Rahim matchup for November 12th, Which,
yeah, he wants a return bout.
Yeah, and so that has been set. That's set in stone, and it's going to be for the WBC championship. It's going to be a very interesting fight. Rockman fought in Chicago a couple months ago. It was actually interesting. I did see him next to his hotel, and boxing, a lot of people don't realize it. It takes a lot out of you. He won his fight handily, if I do believe so, but looking at him the day after, you couldn't tell because he was walking very slowly, very gingerly. Somebody wanted to grab him, and he couldn't move him away and defend himself. Boxing just takes a lot out of you, and anybody who does it for 15, 20 years, you know, you're taking time off your life by doing that.
Well, you know, there's been conjecture as to whether the onset of Parkinson was brought about by boxing matches that Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali underwent during his career. So some people state that is the reason why he has Parkinson's, and some people stated that that had nothing to do with him having Parkinson, because you notice and remember toward the end of his career he went into this tactic called rope-a-dope, where he allowed other boxers to beat on him until they became tired, and then he would take over.
Right. Well, I'm sorry, especially towards the later part of his career, he was taking a lot of headshots, even though the rope-a-dope wasn't working then, because he wasn't protecting himself. When we think of rope-a-dope, we look at George Foreman. Even then, with George Foreman, when he first did that, he was taking some shots, and George Foreman, what most people have said about George Foreman, has hands of freaking concrete. And for a person to just on purposely want to take some of those shots, even glancing blows, once again, goes back to my simple point. You have to be a little bit crazy to box. So, you know, you just look at all the stuff, and sometimes it's just very, very hard to watch.
Well, sometimes boxing is hard to watch anyway.
Yes.
In his pugilistic endeavors.
Exactly. There you go, using those big words. I'm going to have a dictionary around me. That's cool.
Not really at all. I want to remind our listeners that our website sponsors this edition of Sports Flight FYI. It's urbancollegesports.com, the website with all of your HBCU scores, stats, rankings, football classic information, and we also put various stories on there pertaining to HBCUs or anything pertaining to sports we will put on there. So for all of your HBCU information, make certain that you log on to urbancollegesports.com. And this week, our sports aficionado question is, name the heavyweight, as we were talking about boxing, name the heavyweight with the most career knockouts. Name the heavyweight with the most career knockouts. Now, the answer on that will be a week away on the website. So that information will be on our website. And once again, that website is urbancollegesports.com. Talking about Major League Baseball, you know, a number of people have stated that the Chicago White Sox, who as of August 1st had a 15-game lead in the Central, that they choked. The Chicago White Sox have not choked. They went thus far for the month of September, they've gone 14-10. It's just that it was unexpected that the Cleveland Indians would be playing out of their minds. The Indians have played at a clip better than 700.
Yeah, and
that is what has transpired, and that's what has hurt.
Well, I think also you look at the choke is Cleveland has played so well, mm-hmm. and the losses that the Sox had were so bad. So you add those two up, Chicago's choking. But that's not really the case, just like you said. It's more of the simple reason
that Cleveland has just played beyond what
out their freaking
expected.
Mind.
Exactly. And Chicago, because with that type of lead, all they needed to do was play 500 ball, and they played better than 500 ball. It's just that Cleveland, and then most people would indicate that the other teams trailing them or chasing Chicago would have to win practically every game. And that's what has happened with Cleveland, with them winning 7 out of 10 of their games over the past 2 months.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. So, yeah, it will tighten up the belts, and, you know, people here in Chicago are getting a little bit stressed over this.
A little antsy, huh?
Yeah, because everybody was well assumed that actually Chicago was going to be the first one to clinch in the major leagues. They thought they were, because they had such a huge lead, they thought they was between them and St. Louis, Chicago was going to clinch.
Yeah,
St. Louis has clinched about a week and a half ago.
Right.
So a lot of people thought, well, they can go ahead, rest the players, and get ready for the playoffs. Now that the White Sox have to play these very important games now, that it's actually, if they really think about it, it might help the White Sox more than hurt, because looking in, throughout the history, teams that clinch very early takes them a little bit of time to in the playoffs to get back in the right playoff mode, because a lot of players, a lot of pitchers get shut down very early, do very little work. Relievers don't get that much work in. Regular position players don't play as much. They're getting their rotation set up. They're letting the young guys play. They get all the call-ups from AA and AAA to go ahead and play, rest the position players. So when it comes time to playoffs, you don't get that game speed because you've been not active for the last month of the season. Now here with Chicago, they're playing every single game. Every single game is very important. So they do go to the playoffs, they're going to be more ready to perform better for the playoffs and actually go further. Because you look at a team like the St. Louis, who's doing their roster, they could lose maybe game one or game two. You're down 2-0. Now you're trying to play catch up. And winning 4 out of 5, I don't care who it is, winning 4 out of 5 is always a hard thing to do.
Well, yeah, and that was a tough loss for them last night with that walk-off home run in the 9th inning by the Tigers.
Yeah, and go figure, it was somebody from Chicago.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he's from Chicago.
Oh, okay. You couldn't have written a better script.
Yeah, and that's what's freaking these guys, that's what's freaking the, a lot of this media in Chicago.
Well,
they see all these
games
things
with the Tigers, and they need to win all 3 of those games. Basically, for Cleveland to have a shot at winning the AL Central, they are going to have to be within 1 game of Chicago going into this coming weekend series. And
yes,
for those fans who are unaware, this weekend, Cleveland plays Chicago, and it very well may be for all of the marbles. And also, New York goes to visit Boston, and they play Boston the last 3 games of the season. So that definitely will be for all of the marbles.
And then if you look at as far as with Boston, as far as the AL East, you're looking at basically 4 teams playing for 3 spots.
Right.
Because you're looking
at the AL West is all but wrapped up.
Oh, it's gone. But you look at it, Cleveland, Chicago, Yankees, and Boston are pretty much all in the same, is in 2 races.
Yeah,
the
they
division
can all
race
win their division, or
been,
they can win the wild card.
Exactly. And you look at it right now, Cleveland, New York, and Boston are all tied for the wild card. One of them is only getting in. The loser in the East is then battling for the wild card. So everybody, I don't care what nobody says, everybody's going to be scoreboard watching Friday, Saturday, Sunday to see what's going on. People are going to get confused. And truly for Boston, tonight is huge for them. Because we're taping this on Tuesday. Tonight is huge because they have a doubleheader against Toronto.
Well, as we tape this, they won the first game.
They won the first game already. So that has put them, that's the reason why their tie is a 3-way tie.
Exactly.
So now you got to see what New York is doing against Baltimore, okay?
New York should sweep Baltimore.
Yeah.
Baltimore has packed it in.
Baltimore is just waiting for Sunday.
Yeah, Baltimore has packed it in. It's over.
Yeah, Baltimore, they're waiting for.
Romero's not returning. Sosa's not returning to the team.
Yeah.
And the other players are just playing the string up.
Yeah, they just collecting checks.
So New York should not have any problems with Baltimore. They should sweep Baltimore, period.
So, therefore, Boston needs to do the exact same thing to sweep. Because isn't it ironic? We've done a marathon, 150, really 58 games, and it's going to come down to a three-game series with the Yankees at Boston, at Boston, where they begin the season, Yankees at Boston and New York.
As it should be. That's the way it should end.
I honestly, I truly do believe that with the leagues, and I think this should be done with in every league in the four major sports, that the first 2 weeks of the season, you play in your division. First 2 weeks is all division games, and the last 2 weeks is all division games.
Not a bad idea.
Makes the games very important because of all this stuff, because you're playing for division, you're playing for wild card. That's where these games are very important. And then you look at Cleveland. Cleveland's going to be playing Chicago. Chicago has a little bit more wiggle room as far as distance-wise than New York and Boston, because New York and Boston is tied.
Right.
Chicago has a little bit more...
Chicago has a two-game lead presently over Cleveland going into tonight's game.
Exactly. But if it's still, regardless, the White Sox series is very important to Cleveland because they have to keep on winning to keep the wild card
alive.
If they keep on winning, they might not win the Central, but they can win the wild card by keep on winning, because Boston and New York are pretty much going to beat each other up. And I do see that New York, the Yankees-Boston series, is going to go down to the last game Sunday. Everybody's going to be watching. And I would not be surprised if it does come down to that everybody's available for that game.
Well, from the outside, I see Cleveland as having the most pressure on them, and I mentioned from the outside. On the inside, I don't believe these players are putting any undue pressure on themselves, because Cleveland is a very young team. They were not expected to be ready to contend for playoff.
Oh, this is fun for
playoffs,
them.
So they are a year early based upon most projections. So
yeah, this is fun for them.
Yeah, the expectations would be for this coming season. And that was, well, I mentioned that was a horrible loss for Chicago last night. It was a horrible loss for Cleveland on Sunday, losing that fourth game. Had they won that game against Kansas City, they would have taken 4 out of 4. But the center fielder, who is a rookie this year and has played outstanding, Grady Sizemore, loses that ball in center field, and the runner scores from third in the ninth inning for Kansas City, and they lose that game as a result of that. So each team has had devastating losses in the final inning. So it's going to come down to that final series, but Cleveland has got to continue to win.
Yes.
The pitching has been there all season. The hitting has come about just after the All-Star break that they start to hit.
Yes. Yes. So once again, the one thing Mr. Magoo has gotten right is setting up the wild card, and it has made September exciting to watch baseball. Everybody has to agree that even though we don't have a home run record or chasing Babe, that the pennant races, as far as the teams involved, before it was a lot dealing with in September when the wild card, it was individuals. But as far as the team environment involved, this came the last couple of years, you cannot ask for anything more than what's been going on. You can't ask for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Each week, Sportflight brings to you former Major League stars who open the doors for today's black athletes. During the football season, we choose to call it Bronze Pioneers. Many black athletes of the past are recognized as symbols of struggle for freedom, justice, and equality, such as Jack Johnson, Joe Louis, Jesse Owens, and Jackie Robinson. They resonate. However, black gridiron pioneers such as Fritz Pollard, Kenny Washington, Marion Motley, and Dick Night Train Lane have yet to be afforded similar status. Sportflight Bronze Pioneer is in recognition of these black paragons of football nobility. This week, Sportflight's Bronze Pioneer is Paul Bustell Robinson. Paul Robinson, singer and an actor, most noted for his performances of Othello. Robinson was born in 1898 in Princeton, New Jersey. Upon scoring the highest mark ever attained on the New Jersey High School examination, Rutgers University awarded Paul an academic scholarship in 1915. Although Robinson would spend the bulk of his professional career on the stage as an accomplished actor, during his freshman year at Rutgers, he displayed his football skills on the gridiron as a walk-on, becoming the first black player at Rutgers. During the late 1800s, early 1900s, players lacked the height and weight of today. Robinson had the reputation that of a giant, with a 6'2", 190-pound frame. During the first day of scrimmage, Robinson received a broken nose, sprained shoulder, and an assortment of cuts and bruises, as a number of the white players tried to ensure that Robinson would not make the team. During Robinson's next practice, a player brutally stomps his hand. Now angered by the white player's brutality, Robinson decides to retaliate. On the very next play, as the backfield comes toward Robinson, with his massive arms, he takes down two linemen, as well as the ball carrier. Then in one fell swoop, he puts the ball carrier over his head. But before Robinson could smash the player into the ground, a Rutgers coach intercedes. From that moment on, Robinson would never again be roughed up by teammates. During his college career, Robinson would become only the third black player selected by Walter Camp as an All-American football player. In 1921, Paul Robinson joined Fritz Pollard with the professional football team Akron Pros. With Robinson and Pollard, the Akron Pros enjoyed an unbeaten streak of 18 games. With Robinson having an outstanding season playing tackle and end, in 1922, Robinson once again joined Pollard at his behest with the new Milwaukee Badgers. By 1923, the theater was beckoning Robinson as he departed professional football for the bright lights of a theatrical career. Paul Robinson died at the age of 78 in 1976. Paul Bastille Robinson, Renaissance man and bronze pioneer. This has been a Sport Flight, FYI. Did anything surprise you this weekend in week three of the NFL?
The injuries. Look at all the major injuries that happened. Because
Tequil Spikes, Rodney Harrison.
Tequil Spikes ruptured his Achilles. You look at as far as Rodney Harris. He basically broke every broke every alphabet in his knee. He broke MCL, ACL, PCL, MLB, ABC.
And Rodney Harrison is in his 30s, so it would give you cause for concern to determine if he will be able to come back.
Well, not only come back.
Ty Law had a year ago.
I was just about to say that.
Still isn't 100%.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I hate to say this, but I'm calling it right now. This will be the last season in New England for Rodney Harrison.
Maybe his last season in the NFL. Period.
I think he'd be able to come back. He's a Warrior. I think he will be able to come back, but I would not be surprised for New England to cut him. Because Belichick, that is his one MO. You get hurt, you're not even at 95%, you're not be able to help me. So I would not be surprised to see him get cut next year, even if he makes a full recovery.
Well, I won't be surprised. That's what happened with Ty Law.
And that's the reason why I'm bringing it up. Happened to Ty Law. You saw Malone got cut. That was after an injury and stuff like that. So what? He was the leader of the defense. So what? That didn't mean nothing.
You've heard that. What was it? Is that from a movie or something when they say he's back?
Who's that? Oh, that's Nightmare on Elm Street.
Is that what it was? It was a little girl watching a TV.
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Well, you know who's back. and this is as a result of Chad Pennington and Jay Fiedler's injuries. Benny!
Isn't he dead?
Benny is back again.
They?
With the Jets, Jets, Jets.
They dusted him off.
They have signed him once again. Vinny Testaverde, he of 42 years of age, has returned. He who did not play since 2003. He didn't play last season. But Vinny has signed a contract to back up Bolger, who is scheduled to be the starting quarterback for this coming Sunday. Do you think the Jets should just can, well, they can't officially can this season, but
mm-hmm.
do they have any shot of winning and perhaps going to the playoffs this season?
Well, I think
because you know Vinny's going to eventually take over for Bolger. Bolger has never started an NFL game.
And I think that's, and that's something people should be looking at to see. They don't have confidence in Bolger. They really don't. If
right.
they did, they wouldn't have signed Vinny. If I'm not mistaken, Vinny did play last year with Dallas. He played last year in Dallas.
I thought he just played 2003 in Dallas.
No, I'm pretty sure he played last year in Dallas as well.
No, he played in Dallas.
Yeah. But you look at that, once again, I'm like, how much abuse can a man take? He's been through like 25 knee surgeries.
Well, you know, Vinny has been a starting quarterback in the NFL for about 20 seasons now.
Yeah, it's been about...
And he's been with the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Cleveland Browns, New York Jets.
He's been on every team except Houston Texans and the Ravens.
Vinny has been around. He has made the rounds.
I think he made two... He was on two NFL Europe teams. He was on, I think, at least one Arena Football League. He's been around.
Well, maybe he's going to be the reincarnation of George Blanda.
And George Blanda, if I'm not mistaken, didn't George Blanda play till he was like 63?
For some people, it seemed as though it was 63.
He looked like he was 63 when you saw him pull out his helmet. Like,
I think when he finally retired, he did have grandchildren.
I'm like, whoa, isn't that illegal to be hurting the elderly like that?
George was still passing and kicking.
I was just about to bring that up because I was about to say, if I'm not mistaken, he was a good he was a good kicker.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's obviously that's an oddity. You will never see that no more. I remember one Danny White. He used to be the punter. He was the kicker and the punter. For the Cowboys.
Yeah.
You're never going to see that again. That's never going to happen.
I think the last time that did occur was with Tom Tupa, who came out of Ohio State. Tupa was a quarterback and a punter.
And you know Tupa did that because he just wanted to keep a job.
It kept him in the league for some time.
They was like, okay, this for you to stay on this team, you're going to have to kick. If you don't want to do that,
Noticed that the best kickers perhaps over the past 5 years, their last names start with V? I'm referring to Vinatieri with the Patriots.
Okay, because that's all.
Jack with the Colts.
I was about to say, the only V I know is Vinatieri.
Well, Vanderjack with the Colts.
Well, Vanderjack.
How can you forget Vanderjack, what was it, two seasons ago when there was infighting between he and Peyton Manning?
And let's be honest. That following year after he said that,
mm-hmm.
he had to go perfect. Because if he cost the Colts a victory, he was getting cut. Not that Monday. He was getting cut that Sunday night. So now all that's water under the bridge. And speaking of kickers, what about the performance of Akers of the Eagles?
With the injury that he had?
Yeah.
That begs to wonder, why didn't they go out and try to sign a kicker knowing that he was injured? It's my understanding that this Sunday they did sign someone.
Oh, he's definitely not playing.
Yeah, he's definitely not playing.
I think that
because they jumped on. Did you notice when after he kicked that field goal, I think there was, a few seconds left,
yeah.
and his teammates jumped on him, and did you notice that he was holding his, it was like his hamstring?
Yeah, because he pulled his hamstring. What happened was, He had the
That was not the original injury?
No, the original injury was hamstring. It was he pulled his hamstring. He pulled it actually last week.
Right.
And that's
but
how they had to
pulled it with the jubilation and so forth?
No, here's the thing. He pulled it last week and they had to replace him with the linebacker to kick extra points for the game last week. And everybody is, I guess it was assumed that he was okay. Well, when he kicked off to begin the game, he pulled it again. He pulled it on the kickoff. The problem was there was an offsides penalty. So he had to go kick again. Now, he has a pulled hamstring on the second kickoff and completely kicked the ball about 20 yards and was on the ground in pain. The problem was Philadelphia offsides again. So they had to kick it again. But this time, Donovan McNabb actually grabbed Akers and put him on the bench. Like, no, you ain't kicking no more. So they brought in, like, this third-string tight end to do the kickoff. He kicked off the ball like a Pop Warner. It just dribbled down to, like, the 40-yard line. They scored. They brought in the linebacker who kicked the extra point last week. He kicked the ball and went to his lineman's helmet. So now they're in a dilemma. What the hell are we going to do if we need to kick a field goal or an extra point? Akers decides to tough it out and go out there and go and kick extra points.
Exactly.
So when the field goal happened, the reason he was holding it, it was hurting the whole entire time. That's why he tried to run off the field and couldn't. He went down, and the quarter, Dagmer went to hug him but realized he was hurt and basically protected him of his teammates running after him.
Because it looked like everyone was piling on him, and I know I saw him holding his hamstring.
Yeah, because he completely pulled it, and that's why he was in terrible pain. But it was amazing to see, and especially in Philly of all places, where in the NFL, the kicker is not considered a teammate. He's considered a person who has to be there because you need a kicker on every team. Because if you look at, the kicker pretty much is on his own. He can join on the team when he kicks the winning field goal. But if he blows it, he's just a kicker.
Wow.
He can be easily replaced. But it was very interesting to see that everybody, you know, came together with him because they realized what he did was very, very extraordinary, not only for a kicker, but a football player in general, period.
Exactly. But the best game of the day remaining in the state of Pennsylvania was played west of them. It was in Pispuke, PA.
Oh, wow.
Where the New England Patriots once again defeats the Pittsburgh.
You better
23-20.
You better not say that in front of Nicole.
Tom Brady wins once again. This guy just simply does not get his due. Once again, a winning drive, completing 12 of 12 in the fourth quarter, and then culminating in the winning field goal.
Yeah.
The Patriots continue to be the best clutch team in the NFL.
I think the best clutch team in the four major sports.
And they continue to do it as they lose key players. They lost not only Rodney Harrison, but they lost their left tackle, Matt Light.
Yes.
As well. And they seem to always be able to plug players in. And not big-name players, impact players, because these two players were impact players for New England.
Yeah.
Rodney Harrison and Matt Light.
Yeah.
But they are always able to plug in players, and they keep motoring on.
That is true. That is very true. New England is just, without a doubt, the most clutch team. And I emphasize that word, team.
Well, as we do each and every week, we provide you with your historically black college and university scores from this past Saturday, and the scores from Saturday, September 24th. Livingston loses to Shaw 49-27. In four overtimes, Bethune-Cookman squeaks by Norfolk State 63-61. Clark Atlanta creams Lane College 52-20. North Carolina Central takes care of Bowie State 38-19. Hampton upends Morgan State 44-14. Florida A&M beats Tennessee State 12-7. Tuskegee downs Arkansas Pine Bluff 13-9. Jackson State trounces Mississippi Valley State 33-14. Fort Valley State handles Benedict 35-24. St. Augustine shuts out Elizabeth City State 7-0. North Carolina A&T upset by Elon 12-9. Virginia State defeats Fayetteville State 22-15. St. Paul beats Johnson C. Smith 27-7. Savannah State loses to Howard 39-21. Winston-Salem State crushes Virginia Union 31-0. Alabama A&M Bulldogs chew up Allen College 42-0. Alabama State easily handles Alcorn State 38-3. Coastal Carolina upends Delaware State 24-6. Kentucky State dispatches Morehouse 31-22, and there were two postponed games due to Hurricane Rita, Albany State and Southern University, as well as Texas Southern and Northwestern Louisiana State. Your upcoming classic games for this Saturday, October the 1st, North Carolina A&T and Tennessee State, Florida A&M and Florida International, Alabama State versus Southern University, and the fourth and last one, Grambling State versus Prairie View A&M. For further information regarding your historically black colleges, the football scores, the rankings, the conference information, as well as your classic information, make certain that you click on to urbancollegesports.com. Each and every week, Sean and I get into this matter about our pigskin picks. And from week number 3 in the NFL, Sean, I did overtake you just for this 1 week, so we're tied now. I had 7 correct. You had 6 correct.
It's neck and neck like Chicago and Cleveland.
Yeah, we are right there now, as it should be. This week's pigskin picks for week 4 in the NFL. The Philadelphia Eagles travel to Kansas City to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. Your pigskin pick.
After the beating that the Chiefs got of the Broncos, do you expect them to go ahead and bounce back and beat the Eagles? I don't think so. Philadelphia easily over Kansas City at Kansas City this week.
You're preaching to the choir. I agree with you there. Second game. The San Diego Chargers, 1-2, visit the 2-1 New England Patriots. Your pigskin pick.
You know what? I'm going to pick an upset. I'm picking San Diego at New England because San Diego is the best 1-2 team out there. I know that's funny to say. And I think New England's going to have a letdown.
The Browns are the best 1-2 team out there?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. San Diego.
Just checking.
Yeah. Nice try. Okay. Not happening.
All right.
I think New England's going to have a letdown from having that big emotional win against Pittsburgh, so I'm picking San Diego.
You're picking San Diego?
Yes.
Now, you know.
I know where you're going.
I cannot go against the Patriots, although they have some injury concerns with Rodney Harris out and also the possibility of Matt Light being out longer than 1 week. So, however, Belichick has a way of getting things done, so I'm going to stick with the Patriots to win this game. The 2-1 St. Louis Rams visit the 2-1 New York Giants. Your pigskin pick.
Man, that's a good one. I'm going to go ahead and pick the Giants. I think Eli Manning is starting to come up in his own. So I'm going to go ahead and pick the Giants over the Rams because I honestly don't know what the Rams are doing.
All right. I'm going to go with the Rams here. I think the Rams will have too much offense for the Giants. I'm still not totally sold on the Giants' defense. And Eli Manning is still prone to error as he is still a young and upcoming quarterback. So my pick are the St. Louis Rams to defeat the New York Giants. Next game, the Indianapolis Colts at 3-0 visit their divisional rivals, the Tennessee Titans at 1-2. Your pigskin pick.
I'm picking Indy. I think Tennessee still has too many holes to fill. Indiana I think, in a rout over Tennessee.
You know, I feel froggish this week. I think I'm going to pick an upset here because the Titans have played well, even though they lost two games. They've played well in their games. This is a divisional rival. Generally, it comes down to the Colts or the Titans, although it probably won't this season. I think the Titans will get up for this game, and it's going to be in Nashville. I'm going to go with the Titans to upset the Colts next week. And our final game, the 1-2 Minnesota Vikings finally got off the turf, are visiting the Atlanta Falcons, who are at 1-2. Your pigskin pick.
Because it's in Atlanta, well, it doesn't matter because it's a dome game and they both play in domes anyway. I'm going to go ahead and pick Atlanta. I think the running game, it's just going to be too much for Minnesota. And Culpepper, even though he got back into his own, I don't think that's going to be enough. So Atlanta over Minnesota.
Well, as I mentioned before, I am feeling froggish, so I'm going to leap once again, and I'm going to say Minnesota stays on the track, that is the winning track. So I will pick the Vikings to upset the Falcons in Hotlanta next week.
Wow, that's amazing. We went from last week picking everyone except one to this week.
We only had one that we chose together, and that was the Eagles.
Exactly. So we're going to really see who knows their stuff.
Who's the best pronosticator?
Exactly. That's going to be very interesting.
Make certain that you join us next week when one of our topics will be, now that the baseball season or the regular season will be over, we'll do some hot stove league talking. What changes will be made by which teams? In other words, what general managers will not be returning, and in some cases, what field managers will not be returning with their Major League Baseball teams next week. So make certain that you join us for that, as well as another aficionado question, as well as another Bronze Pioneer for next week. And before I go, Sean, you wanted to make mention of something regarding the website?
Yes. If you could go to the website of UrbanCollegeSports.com and click on Sports Flight FYI, it will give you basically a transcript of every podcast that we've done. And also you can leave your comments as far as each individual podcast. Also another feature of it is you can email myself, James, individually. My email address is Sean at UrbanCollegeSports.com. James is James at UrbanCollegeSports.com, where you can go ahead and email us, give us your feedback, tell us what you think, and tell us what we should put on the show, and we'll gladly take it in there. So we're trying to make it more interactive as possible. You can download each and every podcast on our website. Also, for those who have iTunes, you can click on our one-time subscription button, and every time there's a new podcast comes out, if you have that subscription, iTunes will download it, and then you can go ahead and listen to it on your iPod or at work. So we're trying to make it very convenient for everybody to listen to our podcast.
Once again, thanks for boarding this edition of Sport Flight FYI. Remember, never has so few owed so much to so many. Peace! We're out of here.